Well, be safe and good night.
Welcome to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you for tuning into the show. As we have been doing for the past 3 months, the subject of discussion is the global COVID-19 pandemic that continues to affect communities around the world, with millions infected and thousands losing their lives to the deadly virus. Now, I'm hesitant to share the latest figures given the changing numbers of infections and death by hour and by day. But it's fair to say that almost 4 months since the WHO declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic, we are still very much in the thick of it, with the numbers of infections increasing every day, even in countries like New Zealand, which had earlier announced their success in battling the deadly virus. Two new cases were recently discovered in the island nation. In Africa, many countries have relaxed lockdown restrictions, allowing businesses to reopen and people to go back to work with strict health guidelines such as social distancing and hand washing. And in countries like Botswana and Tanzania, schools will be reopening soon. However, as African countries continue to relax lockdown restrictions, the World Health Organization is warning that the COVID-19 pandemic is accelerating across the continent and moving from large cities into remote rural areas, where it will be more difficult to contain the spread of the disease. VOA's Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, notes it took 98 days to reach the first 100,000 cases and only 19 days to move to 200,000 cases.
So even though these cases in Africa account for less than 3% of the global total, it's clear that the pandemic is accelerating. 10 of the 54 countries in Africa are currently driving the numbers, and they account for 75% of the total cases. 5 countries account for 71% of the total deaths.
South Africa has the largest number of cases and deaths. Data show the majority of coronavirus deaths in the region follow a similar trend to that seen in Europe and the United States. That is, most who die are over age 60 and have underlying conditions such as diabetes, hypertension, and obesity. The pandemic arrived in Africa in February, later than in other parts of the world. Moeti says this gave countries precious time to prepare for the onset of the crisis. She says the experience gained from combating deadly diseases such as Ebola and HIV/AIDS has enabled countries to quickly scale up their health operations. She expects Africans will have to live with a steady increase of COVID-19 until there is access to an effective vaccine. However, she says the disease probably could be managed. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Even as we are very much in the midst of a global pandemic, other news continues to overshadow the effects that the virus is having on lives around the world. Here in the US, for example, protests continue over the death of George Floyd, who died in police custody in Minnesota weeks ago. From France to Australia to the UK, thousands of demonstrators continue to march, calling for an end to racism and police brutality. And for only the 5th time in UN Human Rights Council history, delegates attending the 43rd session held an urgent debate on the issue of racism. In Sydney, Australia, Black Lives Matter protests attracted large numbers in defiance of government warnings about the COVID-19. And for that story, we go to Sydney, where Phil Massa reports.
Across Australia, thousands of anti-racism demonstrators rallied against high rates of Indigenous incarceration, deaths in custody, and the removal of Indigenous children from their families. Aboriginal Australians make up about 3% of the population, but almost a third of prison inmates are Indigenous. This Aboriginal woman said she wanted justice for her people.
We're here to support, you know, our future as Indigenous people and to walk against the injustices of what happens to our people.
In Perth, Western Australia, They defied calls by the authorities Saturday not to attend because of COVID-19 fears. Organisers handed out masks and hand sanitizer. New South Wales Assistant Police Commissioner Mick Willing wasn't happy protesters had ignored coronavirus health orders.
It's disappointing to acknowledge that around 300 people chose to ignore the warnings that have been given by police in terms of coming to this public gathering.
There have been separate rallies in Australia by groups protesting the treatment of asylum seekers and refugees. The government had urged demonstrators to stay home because of concerns that mass gatherings could spread COVID-19, which has been mostly contained in Australia. Historical monuments across the world have been torn down in recent weeks by anti-racism campaigners following the death of African-American man George Floyd in US police custody in Minneapolis last month. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. Now, like we said earlier, across Africa, many countries have relaxed lockdown restrictions and businesses are beginning to reopen, people going back to work. But even as life in many of these places is gradually returning to normal, or as many say, the new normal, we're starting to get a better understanding of the impact that the lockdowns have had on people's lives. Let's take a listen.
My name is Mutavali Apol, and I'm a teacher by profession. So COVID financially has affected we teachers because right now we are not paid since February. And the rent, we are supposed to pay the rent, which is rising now. It's now like 4 months when you're not paying that. So what does it mean to me? That when we resume, you start working. I'm meant to get all that money and I pay the landlord. When I don't have money, how will I now afford to buy the food? It means I'm meant to forgo some of my meals. Either break, I'll cut it short, and either I take only one loaf of bread, and yeah.
Yes, my name's Okello Rex. I'm a photographer. I think economically it has impacted me badly because it's now almost 3 months we have been at home. I've just started work last week. Yeah, and life has not been easy. We have been surviving on something very little at home there. As you can see now, the time I move to go and look for money, it's just random because even if I wake up very early in the morning, yeah, it's always just like, it's just like luck. Just like luck, so now I wake up at any time to go and look for money. Yeah, average, I used to earn around 250,000 in a week, but right now I barely make 50,000 even in a week.
My name is Biru Njibiti. It's affected me because I'm not working. Because I'm not working and I cannot get money through sitting home because they closed everywhere. So I have nothing to do. I have to just stay home.
This is Upfront on The Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganya. Now, the global COVID-19 pandemic has severely affected every aspect of life in Africa, from education, with millions of students out of school, the healthcare system, to businesses that have had to shut down during these lockdowns. And as we continue to learn more about the negative impact it has had on the local economies, entrepreneurs who are the drivers of these economies are expressing concern that short of African governments adopting intervention measures like we have seen in countries like here in the US, it will take long to recover to pre-COVID times. Teddy Ruje is a social entrepreneur based in Kampala. I reached him for a conversation on how his business has been affected and some of the opportunities that have been presented by this pandemic.
How has lockdown been for you? I think we did touch base in the early days of the lockdown. Kampala has a vibrant nightlife, from the noises to the barking dogs. music playing from Kokocha, vendors, you know, these hallmarks of Kampala's nightlife. Lockdown is being lifted, are you feeling like life is getting back to normal just by the noises coming from your window?
Well, for the most part, Kampala's nightlife is not back because we still have curfew going on. Car movements have to stop by 5 o'clock, and then everybody pretty much has to be in by 7. That is still ongoing. So we're still kind of enjoying a kind of quiet nightlife, essentially. While restaurants and cafes are open, they still have to close by 5 o'clock. So essentially, yeah, and a massive dagger has been put into Kampala's nightlife. But I suspect not a lot will show up in that sector won't really show up in our economic numbers, because I suspect a large part of Kampala's nightlife is not in the formal sector anyway. So I think it will affect people privately, people that didn't have jobs, that had jobs at those establishments were not necessarily paying NSSF or paying into the tax ecosystem. So you're not really going to feel it on the national economic numbers. But I think from a personal perspective, those people, are definitely suffering at the moment.
Do you feel like the social life is forever changed in Kampala?
Absolutely. I think social life has forever changed. And depending on how long this goes on, I'm afraid we may actually normalize curfew. And considering the elections are here, in about 6 months. So as long as our numbers continue to go up, I think, if you look forward, we may have just normalized permanent curfew of 7 o'clock. So with restaurants being open and, some bars being open, but only up until 5 o'clock. It may be a really long time before we see Kampala's, vaunted nightlife, the kind where you get up at 8 o'clock in the morning and you're walking to work or taking a border or a taxi and people are just stumbling out of the bars and you wonder when they actually go home. We may not see that again. So a lot of things are changing very slowly.
Are the borders back on the streets?
Borders cannot carry passengers. They can only deliver goods. So that aspect of also Kampala's life and identity is also changing very, very much. But it's also the transition now to what do these borders do is going to cause some spikes in, the security. I think you're going to see more an increase in attack on vulnerable individuals on the streets. I've already heard some stories of women and, elderly, their purses being snatched. I actually had my phone snatched, a brand new iPhone got snatched from my hands from a boda who essentially, I guess, was tailing me. And then I got a call. As soon as I pulled it out of my pocket, he rode right by me and snatched it out of my hands. At that point, you just simply cannot do anything about it because he's speeding off. And you just, you wish him well because you understand the situation.
Absolutely. People are hungry, man. People are suffering.
They're hungry. Yeah. They're hungry and are having to feed their families.
You're lucky that all you lost is your cell phone. So as this goes on, what else, what are people going to do to survive? That is the scary part. Now, the World Bank is projecting that there is going to be a massive decline in economies across Africa, going as far as predicting that Africa will see its first recession in 25 years. Let's talk about you as an entrepreneur. How are you feeling this decline 3 months into the global pandemic? How has your business been affected?
Well, immediately when we entered the shutdown in March, obviously, I think at that point, everybody is in a global shock. Nobody knows exactly what is supposed to happen next with the business. So there was a very huge scramble to try to figure out, okay, this is unprecedented. There is no blueprint of what we do next. And for me, I was double hit because I have a restaurant, which, you know, was ordered shut. And then I also have a commercial farm, which was all ordered shut, you know. As all of them are called non-essential businesses. So for a month, essentially, we're just sitting, kind of trying to wait for the shock to wear off and for cooler heads to prevail before we can actually enact any changes to try to actually be able to come back. For Raintree Farms, we've pretty much remained shut except for maybe a couple of weeks or so where we had immediate customer orders we needed to produce or that were already in play before the lockdown that we needed to complete and send to the customers. But for the most part, production has shut down and we're trying to sell through the inventory that we already had or had produced. I figure probably in about 3 to 4 months, we'll finish selling through all of that inventory. And then we'll use that time to try to figure out how do we pivot into this crisis? Where are the opportunities? How can we make this work? Because unfortunately, we can't just shut down. We have bills to pay. We have loans to pay. We have now arrears that we need to pay to both farmers and employees. So you kind of have to be creative in looking at what will work in terms of the business. So as a strategy, we're looking at less at the import markets and looking at what opportunities are available in the health and beauty sector for a direct-to-consumer strategy. And good enough that the shutdown has had some silver linings, because one of the things that we've seen an uptick on is online advertising and e-commerce actually taking off. Mm-hmm. Even though we might not have the right platforms for kind of the distribution. We don't necessarily have an Amazon here. Don't even talk to me about Jumia. Yeah. But I'm seeing a creeping response to this opportunity with online platforms that are really gearing they're shifting their platforms to making sure that small businesses are able to get online. WhatsApp now has a WhatsApp business now has launched with full capabilities for having a marketplace and being able to sell your products. We're on that now. Tremendous performance on our Instagram pages where we are able to put our products up there, put our prices up there, pay a few dollars to Mark Zuckerberg to boost our ads and get them into people's faces on a daily basis. We're actually now, instead of passengers, we're actually now employing some of the boda bodas to deliver our products to customers within the city. So there is a shift to e-commerce, and customers here in Kampala who were traditionally more used to brick and mortar, where they would ask you, you know, where are you located? Where are you located? Where are you located?
Now they're website and how do I order online?
Exactly. Now they're asking that very same question is, how do I get the product? Can you deliver to me? Here's my location and number, etc. So I'm trying to collect some data on some of that in the early stages for as much as I can figure out what data do we need to collect with these new customers. But we've done very well with our beauty product entry into the market, which we thought, oh my goodness, nobody's going to actually, you know, be buying beauty products. Everybody's going to be focused on sustainability and food. But believe it or not, now the bars and salons and barbers are closed. Everybody has to figure out how to take care of themselves, and that's something we didn't even think about. Once we saw the sales, coming up, then we were like, oh wait. This is exactly what's going on. So we basically have to lean into that strategy and try to see
how you can grow and expand and capitalize on that. Yeah,
exactly. Because
there's always a silver line in everything.
You're listening to Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Bunganyi. We are talking to Teddy Ruge, a social entrepreneur based in Kampala. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. On the phone is Teddy Ruge, a social entrepreneur based in Kampala. We're talking about how his business has been affected and some of the opportunities that have been presented by the lockdowns and the pandemic in general.
What kind of reforms would you like to see by the government, short of, say, receiving a stimulus package to bring you back to those pre-COVID production and consumption levels?
I think one of the things, considering we may not have money, I think where we could actually, you know, have really impactful change is at the policy level. If we could loosen some of those policies and regulations, et cetera, this is the moment to actually be able to do it, to allow businesses to be a lot more flexible in how they operate and their ability to shift from one business opportunity to another, wherever they may be able to find it. But being nimble right now is extremely is a needed kind of talent that businesses need to have. But in order for that to actually happen quickly, government needs to be a little bit more nimble and also efficient. That means removing roadblocks. That means embracing digital platforms to be able to deliver services to businesses and companies very easily without the bureaucracy. So if government's going to attack those bureaucracies, I think, you know, private sector will pull itself up. Just get out of our way, remove the roadblocks even further, make it a smoother transition for us to be able to connect to our customers and also financing opportunities, etc. And I think things will shift very, very quickly. If there are motivated business people out there, they'll find a way to survive. They'll find a way to survive.
Yes. 2020 has been a very tough year for agribusinesses. By the time COVID lockdowns were announced in March, you were already struggling with another threat to your farms, the locusts. How did that impact your business, and what is the situation like right now?
Well, that's still ever present, right? Because I think 2020, you know, arrived with, I'm like, hey, I'm going to have 12 acts, not just three. I'm just going to have 12 acts. I'm just working my way through all of them.
Yeah.
So the early part of the year, we started with the locust threat. Part of the country is affected, but fortunately, they haven't reached where we are. That had multiple fronts of a threat to several agribusinesses. For one thing that most people don't think about from an agribusiness perspective is, like, when you're here working in Africa, when your biggest markets are on the international scene, for majority of your products, you're going to need organic certification in order to be able to export these products. Now, interpret that however you may, you know, in Africa needing organic certification for your products to reach international markets. But what ends up happening is that a government response to the locust means wholesale spraying of entire regions and areas. So if you spray a farm that is, you know, maybe 200 hectares or 500 hectares wide that is organically certified, you immediately kill its opportunity to be able to export, because it takes 3 years for those chemicals to work their way through through the soil. So if they're unable to if they're unable to export organically certified food, then what happens to that part of the economy. Yeah. So that's a challenge. So that's level one. The other level, we also, from transitioning from 2019, we were coming from heavy rains in the region. Lake Victoria is literally overflowing. Any adjacent farm and river or tributary, et cetera, is overflowing. Those farms are being flooded out. So we were fighting that, and then the locusts, and then now the shutdown. Because we were also affected by the floods, because we grow a crop that doesn't like too much rain. So you line all of those up, it's surprising we even have a pulse at this moment.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk. I know we're running short of time, but I wanted to pick your brain on this issue. You know, the U.S. protests calling for police reform after the death of George Floyd continue around the country. I know you've been watching those. When you see this, yeah, as a person who has lived here for many years, here in the U.S., and gone back to the continent, how do you feel about the protests and the issues around race relations, police brutality, Black Lives Matter? Is this an issue that resonates with a regular Ugandan on the street? And I guess the other thing that I really wanted to ask you is, does Black Lives Matter in Uganda, if somebody asks you that? How do you
yeah, I answered this question a little bit earlier, but you know, I tend to look at the Africa's demographic in kind of two different ways. So we have our post-colonial leadership, which is within the 3% of the continent that is above 58 for most of the countries, and then the rest of the country, as you know, we're, I think, over 70% of us are under the age of 30, connected to the internet, globally aware, et cetera, et cetera. We have this challenge of being, of having colonized mindsets. So where we kind of ape and do whatever it is that the West does, and we think that that is better than whatever it is that we can actually do. Mm-hmm. So the Black Lives Matter aspect is really, really a complex and difficult subject to really just kind of pull apart in a few minutes. Because one, the very same police violence that Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd protests are addressing are very much real here. We still are still subjects to police violence. Nairobi, Kenya, I saw a whole bunch of tweets about, you know, why are you supporting Black Lives Matter there when Black Lives don't even matter here? You know, here's a list of all of the people that, you know, extrajudiciously been killed by police. And the same in Uganda and probably in, you know, Tanzania and other countries across the continent. We still have that strongman ethic where our lives really don't matter to governance. So it sends a mixed message seeing that. I think as Africans looking at America pretty much imploding under the Black Lives Matter protests, which are long overdue, by the way, and you know, it's unexplained why George Floyd really was a trigger point for these massive global protests when there have been so many other Black lives that have been lost along the way. It's ironic that I think that we look at that, and then also here, we make the mistake of actually also now having the mentality that all lives matter. You know, we've been having that debate here in Uganda because a TV, local TV station ran a program where there were musicians who had T-shirts on that said "All Lives Matter." So there's a disconnect to what the Black Lives Matter means versus, you know, the bandwagoning and parroting what some white people want to be as a countermeasure to a very real struggle that needs to be made. So there's a lot of I guess the best way to actually say it is that, you know, the two camps in the United States that are there are weirdly parroted here. We have a sector of the population that is very aware, that is very woke, that is also fighting for civil liberties, but we also have the other one that is just simply parroting whatever they find as, this is the thing we need to do because we have white supporters we need to please. So we need to be able to sound like we're saying the right thing. But you come across as not really understanding what it is that you're parroting.
TMS Rouge is the founder and CEO of Raintree Farms, an agriculture export business based in Uganda. And my thanks to you for tuning in to the show today. Remember to connect with us on our social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and on Instagram at Upfront Africa. Until next time, goodbye, Africa.